Because of my injury to my foot, Sally and I couldn't go camping in September. Usually go first week of September, we like to camp. And we couldn't go this year because my foot wasn't healthy enough. And what I missed out on was the campfire experience. I think campfire is one of my favorite part of camping. Anybody else like that at all? Do you like your campfire? For me personally, my favorite part of campfires is at the end when the logs have burned out and you've just got the embers. I got a picture of embers. Well, it'll take a while to get on there, but you know what embers are at the end of a campfire. And I like watching them flicker away. And what's nice in September is we can have a campfire, you know, that's dark by no later than 8:30. Sally goes off into bed and I can just sit there by the campfire and watch them and then go to bed not too late. And it's quite hypnotic to watch them. Sally tells me that in South Africa, they call this bush TV. And you can see why. Watching the glowing embers flickering after the campfire's gone down, it's bush TV. That's got a good sense to it. It feels that way in a way. Sometimes I'll watch a particular ember. You ever do that? Just watch one ember? It will flicker away for a while, but eventually it will go out. And when it goes out, I immediately wave often my hand with the ember and it will come back to life again. Or I'll blow on it and the ember will, you know, break forth in brilliant orange. And then after a period of time, it will go out again. If I had the time and the energy and the inclination, I could watch bush TV all night long and slowly observe all the embers fading away, disappearing. For me, there's a kind of pathos in watching the embers. I feel, I don't know how to describe it, a kind of sadness, but a yearning and aching when I watch the embers as they slowly fade away one by one, each one disappearing. For me, it becomes a kind of an analogy for life. We're all like embers. And we burn for a while, some of us very brightly, and then all of us will disappear, will fade away. And not just ourselves, but all the embers around us will eventually fade away and then disappear too. Scientists say that our sun is about 5 billion years, says, I got a picture of our sun there. Scientists say that our sun in about 5 billion years from now will run out of hydrogen to burn. And then it will start burning helium. And when that moment arrives, the sun will expand into a red giant, maybe 20, 30 times bigger than it currently is. And the heat from this new version of the sun will burn away everything on way on Earth. Everything on Earth will be burned away. The water will be burned away, all the vegetation, all the life on the planet will be burned away, the atmosphere will be burned away, and we will become a wasteland. Life will come to an end, obviously. And I remember a university professor telling his class that he had just read that scientists had been mistaken about how long the sun had as a main sequence star and the kind of phase that our sun is in today. He said, it's not 5 billion years from now that we have left. We got only 25 million years before the sun goes into a red giant phase. And when the students heard this, they became very sad and depressed about this news. See, because 5 billion years seems like forever. 5 billion years seems like eternity. So there's something eternal about 5 billion years. But for 25 million years, it feels very close in a certain kind of way. And the professor objected to the students being depressed by this news. He said to them, what difference does it make to you? You're going to be dead long before 25 million years or 5 billion years. It's all the same to you. You're going to be long gone before either time frame occurs. You're not going to be here to witness it. And yet on an emotional level, there is a big difference between 25 million years and 5 billion years. One feels like forever, has an eternal nature to it, and the other, cosmically speaking, is just around the corner. And there seems to be something in our human condition that was neatly summed up in the student reactions. We know about our own mortality, but at the same time, we have this yearning in us for eternity and immortality. And even if we cannot directly participate in the eternal, because we are not immortal, we want to be part of something that endures, has an eternal dimension to it, has a kind of immortality to it. It's important to many of us that even if our own personal ember fades away, that the underlying fire that gives rise to it endures. When the sun becomes a red giant, scientists say that it will endure in this state for roughly 1 billion years. And then after that time, it will run out of helium to burn. And when it runs out of helium to burn, the sun will collapse in upon itself, gushing forth huge amounts of spray that make our nebula in our galaxy and our universe, and the sun will become a white dwarf, ejecting most of what it is or was. And as a white dwarf, the sun will continue on like an ember in the fire pit for perhaps another 50 or 100 billion years. And then it will fade away, burn out completely, and then disappear. And this process will happen again and again and again in the universe until someday the whole universe will just fade away. All of it becoming a repository of black charcoal bits at the bottom of the fire pit. How do you feel about that? Does it depress you at all? Does it depress you that all our natural processes of existence, all of them, ultimately lead to death? Obviously our own personal death, but to a cosmic death as well. The whole system that we are a part of, every fiber we're a part of, all that we are being, all that makes us up as physical beings is moving towards death. And it may be a long time from now, it might be 25 million years from now, it might be 5 billion years from now, it might be a trillion years from now, but the inevitable ending point is the same for everything. The same dead end. There's nothing in this universe that has an eternal or mortal characteristic to it. Nothing. Everything will end up at the same point, which is nothing. Yet in the midst of this sobering truth as human beings, we have this yearning for eternity and for immortality. Where does that yearning come from? Because we want objective truth in our lives. We want objective moral truths. We want some ultimate purpose that we're moving towards. We want some objective that we're moving towards in life. We want some ultimate purpose that undergirds our daily experiences. Where will we turn to have this part of ourselves satisfied? Ancient peoples could turn to God, but so many modern people, at least in the West, have given up on God. Where will they turn? I mentioned to you last week that we're seeing an interesting correlation in our society because we are the first society in all of human history where large sections of people have no ultimate or higher belief in a higher power of some type. We're the only society in the whole of human history where many people do not believe in some kind of transcendent reality. We're seeing a fall in basic religiosity on the one hand, but we're experiencing the rise and watching the rise of anxiety and depression on the other hand. There's kind of an inverse correlation. As people's religiosity goes down in our culture, the rise of anxiety and depression grows. Do you think that's a coincidence? I don't think it is. I think the growing crisis of anxiety and depression, of drug use, in our society, in our world today, is a direct result of people losing connection and belief with a higher power, which we call God. Losing connection even in a remote way with something that's eternal. Believing in something that has an immortal dimension to it. A story that invites us to tap ourselves into this immortality. A promise to us that there is a gift of immortality waiting for us. Once people give up on eternity and immortality, then what's the point of life? What does it matter in the end? if we're all going to end up at the same dead-end place anyways, why bother? Without God and without immortality, life becomes pointless. Why? Because without God and without immortality, there is no ultimate meaning to life. Does it even matter that we existed at all? Does it matter that you existed at all, that I existed? Does it matter that people who went before us or people who are going to come after us ever existed? What difference does our life make in the end if it all is going to end up at that dead-end place again in the final analysis? The answer is without God and without immortality, nothing matters. This year, the Toronto Blue Jays had a terrible season. This is the last game today, thank goodness, right? They way underperformed people's expectations. They underperformed especially my expectations, right? They didn't make the playoffs, and that means that they don't have a chance of getting the World Series victory this year. As an avid fan, this seems like a tragedy to me. But in the grand scheme of things, does it matter? What do you think? Probably not. The Toronto Maple Leafs will probably flame out again this NHL season, like they always do. Does it matter? Probably not. I noticed that the leader of Hezbollah, Hassan Nasrallah, was recently killed in an Israeli airstrike. Looks like there's a growing chance for war in Lebanon. Again. Does it really matter in the end if war comes to Lebanon? What do you think? In the ultimate sense, does it matter? Over billions and billions and billions of years, are we all heading to the dead end place that is inevitable for us? Does it really make any difference in the end, whether he was killed or whether he lives? Does it matter if there's a war in Lebanon or not? I mean, lots of people are going to be killed, lots of destruction, but we're all going to die anyway, so what does it really matter? And the earth is ultimately going to burn up anyway in the end, so does it matter that it comes sooner than later? Why does it matter to you that it comes later than sooner? Well, because I want to live. I hope you're objecting to me and what I'm saying today. Maybe it doesn't really matter if the Blue Jays win the World Series or whether the Maple Leafs win the Stanley Cup, but surely something like another major war or an environmental catastrophe or a mass shooting matters to us? I hope it does matter to you. It matters to me as well, but the question is, why does it matter? Why does it matter to you? And why does it matter to me? We heard from Willis Webstad in the video earlier about her residential school experience. But you know, lots of people have suffered at the hands of other people. Through the eons of time, one tribe has conquered other tribes, subjugated them, and pushed them out again and again. This happens over and over again in human history. It's probably going to happen in the future. It's probably happening right today in some part of the world. Why should it matter to Canadians about how First Nations peoples were treated 25, 50, 100, 200 years ago? Now, I know it matters to many of you here today, but my question to you is, why does it matter? Why should it matter? If there's not something ultimate at play in our life circumstances, in the end, then who cares, really? If there's no God, if there's no ultimate purpose to which we're moving towards, if there's no ultimate accountability in life, if there's no ultimate rules, no ultimate moral responsibilities that we have towards each other, if it's all going to end, come to an end at the same end point for all of us, it's going to end without any ultimate implications, no matter what we do, then why bother? The Russian novelist Fyodor Dostoevsky wrote famously that if there's no God, then all things are permitted. He wrote that in one of his novels. If there's no God, then all things are permitted. And see, that's the full implication of the idea of living apart from God. That's the inevitable conclusion that we're going to rush to at some point as a culture if we lose God in our lives and in our experiences. Because the full implication of the idea that our existence is essentially a fluke of nature, that we're just random particles assembled together on a little speck on some backward, unimportant part of the universe signifies that ultimately anything and everything is permitted. And people are taking advantage of that today. Don't think this is something that's going to come down in the future. It's happening today. It's happened in our history. Because if there are no objective rules or conditions, anything and everything is permitted, if you can get away with it. A Romanian Lutheran pastor named Richard Wurmbrand, and I have a quote up, the quote's up on slides, Debbie, he says this, and he was arrested by the communists in Romania when they took over in the late 1940s, and he was in jail for many, many years. He says, "The cruelty of atheism is hard to believe. When man has no faith in the reward of good or the punishment of evil, there is no reason to be human. There is no restraint from the depths of evil which is in man. The communist torturers often said, there is no God, no hereafter, no punishment for evil. We can do what we wish. We can do what we wish. Why? Because there's nothing beyond the dead end waiting for us. And that licenses everything and anything. Now, I don't think most of us here want to live this way. I don't want to live this way. I hope you don't want to live this way. But that's because our values and our aspirations have a ring of eternity in them. Do you notice that about what you believe? How you feel about things? There's a ring of eternity in them. Do you hear the ring of eternity in your points of view towards life? We seek justice because we believe there are objective moral standards. And there is some ultimate objective accountability coming towards us at some point. That has the ring of eternity in it too. Did you notice that? We seek to live in environmentally responsible ways because we believe life has intrinsic value to it. But where did this intrinsic value come from? It's a gift given to us by its creator. We have a duty of care to pass onwards what we have received. Do you hear the ring of eternity in that too? We believe in personal restraint and, if necessary, at times, personal sacrifice. But where did we get these ideas from? On what basis do we justify to others why we live this way? This is not a new problem for us, you know. This is the problem that the writer of Ecclesiastes was grappling with. And he was writing about this 2,500 years ago. What is the purpose of life without God? Without God, what is the point of it all? And the answer, according to Ecclesiastes, is there is no point to life apart from God. Meaningless, he says, meaningless. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless apart from God. An older translation puts it this way, vanity, vanity, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. A world without God is a hyped up world. A world without God has no ultimate meaning to it. A world without God has no experience of eternity or any sense of ultimate destiny, of ultimate purpose, of ultimate value. People work hard, but to what purpose? The days run one after another, but what does that all mean? The winds blow, the rivers run to the sea, life goes through its cycles, but what's the point of it all? Even in our human interactions, the same event happens again and again But to what effect? The same war keeps repeating itself in the Middle East. The same kind of subjugation that we've experienced in our own history happens again and again and again all around the world. It's the same story. I've been paying some attention to the U.S. presidential election. You know, it's the same story every 4 years. It's the same basic story every 4 years. It doesn't change. It's getting kind of boring, to be honest. I'm not finding it as engaging as I used to. No one who lived in the past is remembered anymore, and everyone yet to be born will be forgotten too. You know, it makes me think of those song lyrics, and I think I've got them up on a slide. You know, Eleanor Rigby died in the church and was buried along with her name. Nobody came. Father Mackenzie wiping the dirt from his hands as he walks from the grave. No one was saved. All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? Sometimes people will try to make up their own meaning in life, you know? In the face of the inevitable dead end waiting for us and having lost belief in God, and people look for some means of escape because we're not designed to live without ultimate meaning, value, or purpose. One philosopher said that we should embrace the noble lie. We should pretend that the universe has ultimate meaning to it, even if we know it doesn't. He said we should pretend that there are objective values at play in the universe, even if we know there aren't any. We should pretend there's some ultimate point to our life, even if we know deep down there isn't any ultimate point to it. He said if we can convince ourselves of this noble lie, maybe we can find some way to live in this world together with each other, make it through another day at least, together. And I think a lot of people today are trying to live their life using some variation on the noble lie. We pretend that some things have ultimate meaning, like the Blue Jays winning the World Series or the Maple Leafs winning the Stanley Cup, even if we know that it won't really satisfy us in a deeper way. We hope that we can deliver some ultimate purpose into our life through the things that we have invested ourselves in, even though they always end up disappointing us. Or we pretend that we don't need to have any sense of the ultimate in our lives. But do you think the noble lie is going to work? What do you think? It's going to work for people? Could it work for you? Trying to live the noble lie, to me, is personally trying to live the absurd life. I can't do it. Maybe you can, but I can't do it. And judging by the growing epidemic of anxiety and depression and drug use in our culture today, I don't think it works for a lot of people. Because I don't think it can get the job done. We need the real deal. We don't need lies. We need the truth. We need real purpose, and we need real meaning, and we need real values. That's what God created us for. Not some watered-down compromise that rests on a lie. Real purpose. Real meaning and real values can only come from God. Only God can provide and guarantee real purpose, meaning, and value in your life and in mine. And the world needs to know this truth, especially the world we live in. It needs to hear this truth from people who know the truth. It needs to meet people who are living out real purpose and real meaning and real values in their life, and who understand where the source of these real meanings and real purposes and real values comes from. They need to know people who know God. And it's really time for all of us to put aside any sense of the noble lie that's been given to us, because we're all living to some extent in the noble lie, and instead embrace an eternity that rests on God, embraces an immortal potential destiny for us that rests on God. Jesus showed us what this life looks like. He tested its power on his way to the cross when he met the ultimate dead end that all of us are going to meet. That dead end that confronts everyone and everything. And there he met his end. Jesus was like an ember fading away into oblivion in a fire pit. But he trusted himself completely into the care of the one who is beyond beginning and beyond end. And this one blew the breath of eternal life upon him. And now he lives and reigns in heaven with God. And he invites you and me to walk his path today, to walk his path, and eventually join him there too.